In this podcast, Brent Angus, VP, Global Software Services at NTT Limited, talks to Ian Murphy at Enterprise Times about enterprise software licensing and are you paying too much for licenses you don't need? Brent, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ian. Thank you very much for having me on the show today. I've been in the IT industry for 35 years or so now. I've come up through the ranks. I've done a lot of the engineering roles and seen a lot of changes in the industry. The most recent one being this whole switch from hardware to software that we're seeing right now. That was why I jumped on the opportunity to try and drive software into our clients and through our organizations myself. Pretty exciting times, lots of changes.
If you go back over 40 years, the whole idea of enterprise software licensing has been that large companies pay as little as possible for the software they use. It promises lots of savings, but is that actually true?
This is one of those really good questions. I'm not going to say it depends because that would be the easy way out. The analysts are telling us that most companies are paying too much. They're paying up to 30% over. But the scary thing is, quite often, if you look inside a specific company, they'll pay 60% too much for one license and 30% too little for another license. The risk that that causes is that they're still in compliance risk. They're still at risk of getting taken to court because they're not paying enough of the software that they're actually using. I'd like to share some of the results that we're seeing. At the moment, we've got our sample size of around 50 clients where we are measuring very closely the ROI that these guys are getting, and we are delivering 34% on average of savings across their infrastructure.
Do you want to define what you mean by that ROI that you're delivering?
What we're doing is we take the price of the EA, Enterprise Agreement, and then we take the a la carte price. We then normalize that with the same discount rates to make sure you're comparing like for like. In effect, that client is paying 34% less for that specific software. That's a great saving. But one of the things that we do is we actually drive adoption, and that is the big part of our software practice. We make sure that our clients are using as much of the software as they possibly can. It's interesting when you graph those savings out, you'll see that at the beginning of a contract, the savings are less. Towards the end, the savings are much, much more. If a client does the right thing, if they use good practice and they optimize what they're doing, then they'll continue to grow throughout the life cycle of that enterprise agreement. That's good to watch and nice to be able to turn around and show our clients.
When you talk about good practice, what are you actually talking about?
Visibility is key. The first layer of our offering is around visibility. We have a digital wallet. We will show our clients what they've bought and what they're using. We'll show them based on typically the infrastructure pieces that they have, the licenses that they have, but then we'll also show them the ROI and the dollar values of what they're seeing. So visibility is that first step of really being able to show the value.
It might sound obvious, but one would think that companies have visibility into the software they bought at an enterprise level. And I'm differentiating here between where business units go out and buy blocks of software as they used to 10, 15 years ago, to cloud, which we now know individuals and business units buy and don't tell IT about. When you're talking visibility, are you talking solely about that software purchased by the enterprise for the enterprise? Or are you talking about the need to get visibility across everything that has been purchased and is being used?
This is a big challenge, right? I'm typically talking about the big enterprise-wide stuff. You are always going to have pockets of software being purchased locally, elements that are driving costs up, paid on local budgets and things like that. And that is really difficult to get control of. I think most of our clients have enough problems just trying to manage and drive that pure enterprise play that they haven't really thought about a lot of the smaller pieces at the moment, but that's coming.
At that level, it sounds like all they need is a decent asset register. The whole role of an asset register has morphed over years, and the reality is, in my experience, most people have no clue what they have as an asset.
Yeah, isn't that the case? Let me talk specifically around infrastructure here, because it's where a lot of our focus is. We've moved from perpetual licenses to now subscription licenses in a lot of what we're doing. And typically about 70% of our software we sell is subscription now, whereas a few years ago it would have been flipped the other way. We've still got a lot of perpetual licenses out there inside the client environment. Trying to keep track of that, because that was never tracked in the past. It was always hardware tracked to hardware and things like that. People roll out new pieces of hardware and have to buy a subscription license, or you've got some of the old legacy perpetual licenses there, you've got to make sure you're not double counting. We've seen a lot of issues coming around at renewal time with double counting, where they've downloaded licenses for every single device, yet they still own maybe half of those devices on perpetual licenses. You've got to be pretty diligent to make sure that you're not tripping yourself up.
That throws a whole other level of complexity into this, doesn't it? Because for most people listening to this talking about enterprise software, they think just about software, not about software that comes with hardware and devices. They might also think about software in terms of database software, where it is one particular usage. But today, a lot of software comes as suites, where it flows over into areas that other software we have also covers. How do you begin to separate out exactly what you've got and find those overlaps?
Again, interesting. And this is further challenged by our nice vendors out there as well, because what they love to do is they love to throw things in for free. You'll buy an EA off a particular vendor and they'll say, I tell you what, here's a couple of components of software just in case you want to use it, or security just in case you want to use it, and see quite a crossover on the security space. Microsoft E5 licenses classic, where they start adding the security pieces in. You've really got to be careful that you're only paying for things once and that you're not paying for something from one vendor and not using it. It's tricky, and then further complicated by vendors trying to sweeten deals by providing stuff for free essentially as well. The whole tying to technology, tying to hardware, with the infrastructure space, we are quite heavily tied to hardware a lot of the time. We're talking about operating systems on routers, but then you've also got completely different, where you might be running WebExes, which are completely consumption. You've then got things like PCs, which will run all elements of software. We have a dual stream portfolio where we run infrastructure software asset management and also application software asset management. We're very focused on our infrastructure piece right now. The application piece has been happening for a long time, and there's some quite mature tools out there which we utilize as well to be able to track that. Then we bring it all together so that you can get your single view in one place. You really start then seeing, okay, hang on, I've got this license, I've got security here, I've got this license, I've got security here, and you start to see red flags around overlaps and what's going on.
But can we rely on that free software? It's one thing to say, oh, this vendor's come in, we've taken on a couple of their security devices, and they've given us 1,000 free VPN licenses. But we've got another vendor whose licenses we pay for. Is it fair to expect an enterprise to rely on that free stuff? Because, of course, free stuff goes away if we're not careful. And then we find ourselves in deep doo-doo.
Well, nothing's ever free. They're giving you 1,000 free licenses because they want the 20,000 on the back end, is the general story. One of the things that we spend a lot of time with our clients is upfront, deciding their roadmap, their path, and what they want to do. We can make decisions jointly around technology and the software that's aligned to it and where they want to go. And that's where we'll position what we're doing. Now, if somebody decides to throw in a sweetener there to try and expand their business, all very well, we can look at it. But at the end of the day, you've got to stick fast on what you're doing, what you know, what your plans are, what's right for you as a company. Yeah, don't get lured by a free lunch.
You talked earlier about the shift you're seeing from perpetual licenses to subscription. Does subscription make it any easier to understand what you're actually paying for?
Does it make it easier? It does if you've got visibility. Then all of the vendors we're seeing now are having to come out with new tools to support subscription. A lot of the time, the vendors are driving us to go down a subscription model more than the clients are actually selecting it. To make their products attractive, they have to provide visibility into those. We're seeing a huge variance in the maturity of the vendors in the space. We work very closely with Cisco, and from what I've seen, Cisco is probably one of the best providing access, also providing full API access for us so that we can bring it all together. It's all very nice having single vendors with visibility. But unless you can see the full picture, then you might have a dozen dashboards or more that you've got to log in across. You want to be able to see start to finish across your entire asset. That's super key when looking at selecting the subscription software.
One of the things we've been tracking here is what we're calling subscription suite bloat. And that is where you've bought this piece of software and now another piece of software has been added by the subscription provider. And initially, you get it for free. And then it's only £1 or £2 or £5 per user per month for this additional feature. For a lot of enterprises, it becomes very easy to just allow that price for software to creep up and creep up without knowing if anybody's ever using these additional features. How do we, one, keep track of that, And B, how easy is it to decouple these features once we've started paying for them?
Very difficult if the software is useful. If your users get hold of this and they start rolling it out because it's adding value, then it's tricky to pull it back. Now, if they're adopting it and using it, you've got to ask the question, should we pull it back or should we actually use it more? Is it time to swap a vendor out? That's one of the key things. An EA, an enterprise agreement, will have generally a scope, and as you said, it does increase, but it's no good if you're only using 75% of that. You want to really drive 100% of that. If the vendors are trying to add more products in, you do want to try and utilize that if it's the right product. This comes back to that roadmap setting up front to make sure that we're very, very clear about this is our strategic direction. These are the tools that we want to use. Tools change and you need to relook at these things. Typically, with our clients, we will be sitting down with them either monthly or quarterly, and we'll run through the dashboards of what their usage is, what their costs are, and the benefits they're getting back out. We're granular enough that the clients can see that creep or that bloating and then bring it back if we need to. It's a little bit more difficult when you're trying to track some of that bloat when it's not central and it's being done by separate business units and things like that. Nobody wants to go back once they've rolled out something and trying to keep control of that. That's where it's a little scary if something starts running away, but you're already purchased an agreement for 3 years, for instance, for something else.
But there's another side to that, though, isn't there? Yes, users might use it once they discover it's there. And this, in some ways, has become the beauty of cloud software. It's a low cost. Let your users have it. Instead of paying £1,000 per year for a perpetual license where you might limit the number of people, it's only going to cost you £10 per month per user for the software. Companies, therefore, have ignored the controls they might have had a decade ago on how they buy software. How much does this add to their overpaying? And how many companies actually are in a position where they can track that?
Very few are in a place where they can track accurately. They can track some of their core enterprise agreements and things, but SaaS is obviously quite a tricky one because if it's not coming back central, it's hard. You've got to be able to pull it in centrally. You've got to be able to measure it. And once you start measuring, then you can start running your business around it. There's different ways that we can target that scope creep, bloating, and things that we're seeing. Having a good plan is obviously one. One of the nice things with some of the SaaS software is it's turn on, turn off. You can back out of it, which is good. If it gets out of control, you can ramp it back. We're seeing that with some of the usage-based stuff for some of the analytics and reporting companies. Once your data sets start growing, it starts getting very, very expensive. And we're seeing some of our clients now actively shrink that down and place some of their data sets on cheaper analytics platforms, for instance, and being able to separate and do stuff like that.
How truly flexible, though, is that scale up, scale down? It's one of those promises of cloud. If you're not using it, you turn it off. That's easy in terms of hardware. If I'm not using those extra chunk of CPU or memory or disk storage, I can reclaim it, and I'm often able to reclaim it on a per hourly or even just turn it off within a minute. When it comes to subscription software, we're often talking monthly and in some cases, a 3 monthly turn on, turn off. Is there a need for the software industry to actually review how it deals with cloud subscriptions and turn on, turn off for clients?
None of these vendors like decreasing the number of licenses they have. From an infrastructure standpoint, it's typically a term and it's typically a 3-year term that our clients are signing up for. You've got to be careful when you embark on this enterprise agreement. You've got to start low, work your way up. You've got to plan for growth. You've got to plan for deployment and rollout. Some of these big projects may take 2 years to roll out. You don't want to buy that license in its entirety on day one. You want to be able to focus on your ramp up. A lot of these vendors allow burst, and we want to make sure that we're maximizing that. If there is a way for us to maximize that headspace that the vendor's offering, we want to be hitting on that all the time. We want to be pushing the boundaries. The infrastructure space, it is very difficult. We have seen some cases of clients being able to ramp down during the COVID times where they've come back and said, I need to reduce my costs. I need to be able to do that. And that just comes back to common business sense. But more of the cloud-based applications, you can ramp up, ramp down, and hopefully within a month. I think there's a line between whether it's full-on consumption, usage-based, monthly, say, versus something that is more fixed, like infrastructure, which tends to be there for a number of years. You can be quite safe in buying an extended contract around that. As long as you do it properly and you execute on that enterprise agreement properly, you can still make your savings and you can still structure it in the correct way.
You talked earlier about swapping in, swapping out when user requirements change or when costing changes. It's a nice thing to say. I've worked in tech support. I've worked at dealerships. Swap in, swap out never works smoothly. And at an enterprise level, there are so many different layers to this. For example, the software might mainly be covering the cost of the underlying core database with a smaller cost for some of the end user features on top. But when people swap in, swap out, they don't necessarily understand what it is they're changing. They don't look at the cost of changing data formats, of retraining users, of dealing with other parts of licenses that they didn't necessarily realize applied. When you've been through this process with clients, how smooth can it ever be?
It can be as smooth as the pain they are feeling, because what in the scenario I'm specifically talking about, there was a lot of pain and the pain was cost. It was like, okay, guys, we've got to get our costs down. How do we do this? Well, we can move across to another platform, and then you'll get some of the guys will throw their arms up and go, no, that's impossible. It's going to be too hard, but here's the cost. Okay. And that's the balance you've got to do. I agree. Changing things is never easy. Of course, vendors don't want you to change. They want to lock you in. They want to tie you into their portfolio as much as they possibly can. We're seeing that massively with the cloud vendors and their proprietary pieces that add so much value to a client's infrastructure. They want to use those little extras that Amazon or Azure will provide them at a good price, but they know that that's the hook to keep them locked into their platform and not allow them to transfer across.
One of the changes we've seen with cloud is it's all about configuration, not customization. In many ways, that's cut a huge amount of cost out of taking on pieces of software. But there is a cost, and that cost comes in terms of API usage, because not every piece of cloud software comes with the integration that we need, particularly to our core internal systems. When companies start to look at taking on new software or swapping out software, how many of them review the state of the APIs and the integration implications?
Generally, they have to. If they don't, they're going to get very, very burnt.
But be fair, there's a difference here between they have to and they do.
Yes, fair call. We are seeing a rise in tools that let us do it a lot easily, but there is definitely a pain point there. There's probably even more people that are stunned by fear as well, and that they won't change because they're concerned about all the things that they don't know or the implementations that have happened with the guy that was there previously. And that's why you end up with legacy. It sits there and it can't move off the platform that it is because we've lost the people, we've lost the skills. Or the new platform doesn't support what we're trying to do. We're seeing people transition to platforms that are more ubiquitous, that let us do transfer across and things, but getting rid of that legacy is definitely painful.
And again, on that integration point, how much integration work is now being done in your experience at the enterprise level compared to maybe 5 years ago? Or is it now being increasingly handled by the software vendors who want to be part of your environment?
Let me talk a little bit about us and about the infrastructure pieces that we are primarily focused on. We are certainly leading the charge. We believe we're probably 12, 24 months ahead of our competition around the integration, the automation. Software licensing is all very nice, but really where a lot of the value that we deliver is around our automation, assurance, and the optimization pieces beyond that first layer of just pure visibility. We've been leading the charge. Whenever you lead the charge, you do run into issues that nobody's found before. We're starting to see the vendors catch up. As I said, Cisco's quite mature. Cisco's bringing together a lot of their software platforms so that we can at least start measuring and reporting and recording and things on a single platform. And then you've got other vendors that don't even have a platform. You can't attach to it. You can't get the data out. So we're having to find ways to integrate that, whether it's in its simplest form as a spreadsheet coming across to do manual updates and things or some kind of integration. I wouldn't say that the software vendors, or at least the infrastructure software vendors, are leading the charge in this space. We've kicked this off because we've seen a need in the market. We've seen clients screaming about the issues of not having visibility, not having integration, and we're a long way ahead of where we see our partners at the moment trying to pull us together.
So here's the three-point pitch. You're now suddenly dumped on stage at a major show in front of a room full of people. What are the three things you're going to tell them they need to do to get a grip of their enterprise licensing?
Get it visible. If you can't see it, you can't manage it, and you need visibility up front. Automate. drive the changes via automation, run it across a platform where you can streamline, simplify, and make your life easier, optimize. Take that visibility, take that automation, apply the best practices across everything that you're doing, and make sure that you're just drilling down to the nuts and bolts, the dollars and cents, and driving the best out of that infrastructure. Nobody wants to pay for infrastructure, but everybody needs it. You want to save as much money as you possibly can and get the best bang for your buck.
The idea of vendors allowing customers to save money. It's like a utopia, isn't it?
It is. It is. Is that an oxymoron? We sit in the middle there and help our clients save money and structure it right, because a lot of the vendors are still very much, they land these and then they run away. That's not what happens with new software. It's not what happens with subscription. You need to drive adoption. You can't have shelfware. It's just too expensive. Without really utilizing those products and portfolios, you're not going to get the value out of it. You've got to drive the adoption throughout your enterprise.
Brent, thanks for talking with me.
Excellent. Thanks, Ian. It was a pleasure.